everyone in the audience and the board, if you turn your phones off or turn them on vibrate, and that's to not interrupt the meeting, I would appreciate it. We have the opening of the meeting, call to order. I need a motion to approve the minutes for the June 26th meeting.
So moved.
Do we have a motion, is there a second? Question, all in favor by a sign of aye?
Aye.
Opposed, ayes have it, discussion items A.
The regional freight study has been underway for the past year. It is now complete. In your packet, I think you received an executive summary, and Mary Grace will start us off. By the way, you're not going to be finished in 12 minutes. Unless the chair decides to call it quits.
Thank you very much. We have been working on this regional freight study in partnership with Rohan and IDOT over the past year or so. We brought on 8 Tom Garantino consultants to run the study for us. We have Chris Brewer with us today. He's vice president of AECOM. He's on the project. We also have Albert Cutchins here with AECOM. He's also co-lead on the project. And we've been spending the past year or so interviewing about 100 or so public sector, private sector entities, gathering the latest and greatest freight data, which has been promised for a report for you. And so I will turn it over to Chris to summarize the findings of the report.
Thank you. So, first, do you have any quick comments? Will you have a director of freight practice?
Just to introduce myself, I do manage the freight rail practice for AECOM for all of North America. I think this is really a great study and a great deal of vision has been put into the vision, and I think they've done a great job, so here's the result.
Lee Hutchinson, we're doing freight rail planning and logistics out of our Chicago office, and I work all across North America.
So good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Chris Brewer. The study we're going to be bringing today is an outgrowth of work we did for St. Louis County Economic Council looking at the closure of the Chrysler plant. So again, framing this issue of broader economic restructuring and resilience for this region, but also how the region adjusts to a number of what we think are very significant freight pieces of information. But I'm very clear, I have a 10-minute time limit, so the stopwatch is on. So put simply today, we have a very simple approach, probably 12 slides, very straightforward set of ideas to talk through. It really builds with this notion of change. If we had talked about the last 20 years and the array of challenges this region has faced, we would argue overall that this region has been quite resilient in dealing with expense adjustment, loss of price for the poor, realities of restructure on the east side of the river as well. The fact is, just in the last 2 years, there's been an equally significant amount of change. And I know Mary Grace and Jerry can attest the number of news articles that sent to their mailbox over the last 6 to 12 months. A constant pace of activity and change going on, specifically from a freight standpoint, and ultimately how it impacts this region, which we feel is uniquely positioned both in terms of how you could benefit, but also how you could be impacted if you don't start planning and preparing for these thoughts. Really builds with this notion of a unique moment in time. In 2011, the St. Louis region actually became a top 20 port district. That means your world is a lot more similar to, say, Baltimore than a much smaller market that you may have compared yourself to in the past. It means a different set of challenges, more traffic, more trucks, more trains, how do you manage them, how do you deal with them. Tremendous conversation about I-70, about our new bridge. We talked to the truckers. Frankly, they haven't thought about the new bridge is going to impact their world. To us, that's a concern. Preparing people for land use change and what that means. Tremendous conversation about freight rail. We think freight rail is actually a key priority for the study moving forward. The region needs to focus on it because these issues of freight rail are not just one county specific. They relate to how these rail lines connect, which means both counties, multiple counties, both sides of the river. And I think last but not least, the critical question of if a lot of this freight is simply passing through, we have two challenges. Number one is, how do we add value to it? So how do we make it stop? How do we add value to it? Secondly, if it's just passing through, how do we get it through the system as seamlessly as possible with the least impact on our host community? The drivers of freight are pretty simple. I think one of the most amazing things that we learned from this study, the importance of the I-44 to I-70 connection. So it starts in LA and ends in New York. Least toll, most direct route between the two cities. It goes right through St. Louis. Tremendous high-value merchandise flows along this corridor. So while the region talks a lot about I-70 from Kansas City, which again is a route that's in trouble, needs a lot of repair, replacement someday, This I-44 connection to Missouri is actually just as important or more so to this region. Again, bridge projects, I think intermodal becomes a key focus for this region, makes some interesting data to think about. The region has seen a number of new transload facilities, meaning Dave Jump's group, where they built new facilities to transload a whole unit train, so 140 rail cars, commodities, transloaded all at once onto barge. So much higher capacity, opportunity for the region. But then, how do we align all this disparate infrastructure with these export markets? How do we add value? How do we deal with the through traffic? These are all things that we're really concerned about. So in simple terms, we talk about growth and intermodal. We've heard a lot about it at a national level. For St. Louis, though, the forecast is really interesting. Significant growth, probably a doubling of domestic intermodal shipping containers in 20 years. And this really gets us to a core set of land use questions. There are these intermodal yards on both sides of the river. They tend to be small. We haven't invested in it in a while. But how those intermodal yards connect to our interstates, what arterials they use. One of the key things the study has pointed a big light on is doing a better job of understanding how our trucks are impacting these arterials, managing it, but also looking at how these intermodals are going to grow in the long term to ensure that the region can grow effectively. Again, this is a key piece of the study. Real growth is what we are expecting. Exports, pretty simply, the region talked a lot about China, talked a lot about South Korea, Belgium, again, air cargo, sounds familiar to everyone. I would say for this region, though, we need to be talking with equal zest about Canada and Mexico and how our transportation, namely freight, truck and rail, connect with these two markets. Mexico, in particular, tremendous flow of auto parts to and from, which is a key segment that actually goes right through St. Louis. So again, this is a region that knows automotive really well, strong manufacturing tradition. How do we add value to manufacturing components that are coming through anyways? How do we get them stopped here? The through freight movement piece, I think this is one of our broader concerns as well as opportunities. The forecasts as we look today say that through traffic is going to grow the fastest, which means if we do nothing, we're going to see more freight passing through, and that has a series of implications which are generally less than ideal. Congestion, emissions, generally challenges. Our real challenge, our real opportunity is how to maximize the value what's going on. So we're halfway through. Lee Hutchins.
Great, thanks, Chris. The other part of this, in terms of just looking at transportation from a freight site, is the land use that industry has that makes use of the transportation infrastructure for the region. It became one of the core areas that we looked at in the course of the study. We found 23 areas that really kind of stood alone. They had unique features. They might be in between modes, they might be served by only one mode. We could really point out that 230,000 jobs are in there in these 23 areas. 25% of the region's economic value added and gross product is in these 23 areas. They really deserve our attention to see how they work in a freight network perspective. Manufacturing important, total of about 160 million square feet of industrial floor space. Really important, key part of the region. This map shows where the 23 areas are scattered around the region. We've looked at details in each one, the report covers these, looked at building area, employment, vacancy rates, total industrial area. So, oh, each of these has a little bit different flavor to them. What do we need to have in the conversation about these in order to have them work better, or how well they will be able to really track the performance? We took a little bit closer look at the ones along the river down toward the core of the region. It's a little bit of a busy slide. What we wanted to show is the white circle talks about the building square foot industrial floor space that's there. You can see how it kind of differs in size in the region. The interesting one in the kind of top right corner, Gateway Commerce, that's 10 million square feet, but it's 30 million plant. That's going to really change the traffic network out there. We then have the green circle, dark green being trade base employment, the lighter green of the pie piece being the total, the non-trade base, the remainder of the employment. And you see where the employment in the region is. Well, linking this to transportation, how well does it work? Where are these changes going to be taking place? You know, the I-70, 270 connection on through traffic, the growth factors. If we want to gather more of that as the inbound and outbound loads, value added to the freight coming here, selling the idea of industry, what does it take to make, you know, per city way better? The areas around Lambert Airport, around 270 as well. These are the questions that we've looked at these areas, we begin to talk about them. We look at Broadway Hall Street, we look at Broadway Arsenal, we look at the east side there, the Duple Yard, all become pieces that we realize, hey, these are freight, but they all have a little bit different twist to them.
Question?
Yes.
Did you just look at the area on that square and that map, that actual map?
The total number of study areas covered, 5 counties.
The entire region?
Entire region.
Okay, whether, are there examples outside that map then, or?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can see them, they're scattered across the whole.
Okay, all right, so that's.
Cascadia all the way to St. Charles.
Okay, good, thank you.
Sir. Then we brought it down into a series of recommendations here at the end. First thing, tracking system. Everybody across the country is trying to get their hands around, what are these metrics that we really need to be watching on freight? We see congestion, we see percent trucks, but what does that mean? IDOT, MoDOT measure traffic differently on both sides of the river. MoDOT keeps track of the trucks on the interstate, when they get on the arterial roadways, kind of disappears. Well, that connectivity to industrial sites really matters. So it's a region, we've got to get our, have the potential to get our hands around the data and say, how do we make that work better? The new I-70 bridge, in effect, is adding 20% more access to the industrial sites on both sides of the river. Big change, transformative in nature compared to many metropolitan areas. How do we leverage that investment to help the freight work better, reuse, reduce old industrial sites that's on the doorstep of the region? We proposed the idea of some of the elements that would be in a regional freight transportation district, an entity that keeps track of this all the time. The existing agencies, governmental units, they all keep track, but the idea of the cohesion, follow through, looking at the performance metrics is an idea that may well serve the region to get behind that idea going forward. The sector champion for trade logistics, looking at what are the economic development priorities with these supply chains that really needs to become the focus rather than just the opportunist. It's very good to be opportunistic, but as you move from accidental to deliberate about the future in the region, how do we get our hands on these supply chains? How do we understand what they're changing? In the course of this study, the shift in coal movements, all of a sudden, there's more railroad capacity across the bridge. 2 years ago, if you had a conversation, everybody doesn't have enough time to get across the bridge. It's different today. Those are the things that matter and how you adapt as freight moves in the region. And then to really leveraging the core strength of the region and bulk transportation, the river. Industries make use of the water, the access to bulk goods, manufacturing, producing more finished goods. How do you leverage that for the next step in the region? All part of the first study we're talking about.
Bill, quick closing.
Yeah, the unique moment in time that I think we have right now. There's a industrial resurgence in America, fueled in large part by shale gas and all of the things that are spinning off of that. And then you've got obvious things, plus a unique location in geography. So there are four places that you can cross the Mississippi. Or you know, have a material hub to the Mississippi as a conduit. New Orleans, Memphis, Chicago, and of course St. Louis, served by 6 Class 1 railroads. It's a very elastic network, and whatever you can do as a region to accelerate that network, to make those connections work better, is going to attract business. You know, beyond just the great job you do of deal making, you need to link economic development to the broader logistics. That's what everything's all about now, is helping increase that velocity. If you do that, if you plan for that, you're going to get more growth, you're going to get growing positive numbers. The risk is that it isn't up to business. The less growth and growth that you do get will have impacts that make your communities don't want congestion.
So we've just condensed what was a 60-slide deck about 2 months ago down to 10 minutes. So obviously the devil's always the details. But with that, questions, comments?
Any comments or questions? Yes, Sean.
I realize this is a total transportation study, but is the St. Louis area still third busiest as far as rail traffic?
I would say in terms of total tonnage, first of all, on a marine standpoint, you went from 18th to 25th. So, yeah, no, 25th to 18th. So you're actually top 20 in terms of the marine side. as an inland port, which again is mostly driven by the marine side. Again, it's probably the second largest inland port. I think the rail piece is a lot more complicated to give you a clear answer. There's clear a tremendous volume that's coming through. The real trick is it's shifted dramatically in the last 3 or 4 years with a significant increase in intermodal. The size of the decrease, at least right now, in terms of coal.
Yeah, I would say when we started the study, the answer would be yes. Now it's a little bit uncertain just because the big swing with the volumes in coal. But the other side of the coin is we saw it doing the study on the road side, a lot of tonnage on I-70, a lot of value in goods moving on I-44. I mean, it's really a huge difference, as you said. But we've really been worried about the condition of 70 and the volume there and the congestion the volume brings. There's a lot of value over here. That's something that we look at a little bit differently now and realize that's a different metric and also very important for the region.
Okay. Yes, Mayor.
I'm really glad to see this. This is right in keeping with what I know East West Gateway has been working on a long time. The one thing that I hope is that we continue to make sure that those who are in regulatory positions through the federal government and maybe even the state governments in different places are helping to make these things happen, because there are some regulatory issues that will have to be dealt with the Corps of Engineers, in some cases with the Department of Natural Resources, to pull issues together and make sure that the freight transportation really gets on track. I mean, not just gets on track, but we take it to the fullest potential that we can for the St. Louis metro area.
You're absolutely right. And as Bill was saying about the elasticity of supply chains, it's the details. They really matter. The cost, the delays, the perception. And the perception is very real, too. Bill's worked on a couple of projects and activities with clients. There's a slow response because the perception hasn't changed. The infrastructure is very new, very real. We say, wow, this is a great way to get from A to B, but nobody's, the building of the use takes time. So those are the parts that you're absolutely right, the regulations. But we also have to bring the knowledge of those details to help guide how those regulations change.
Mayor? Sorry. I just was curious that the recommendations don't include talk of the age of our river infrastructure, our bridge infrastructure that is connecting rail together from Missouri to Illinois. So the Carthur, McKinley, Merchants, those bridges are all 125 years old, I think. Is there a need for a new river bridge? Was that addressed? A new rail river bridge? And was that addressed, or at least thought of at least?
I think a year ago we saw the North Industrial Study that St. Louis undertook, and that was the first. Probably the second time when we heard it concerned about capacity on Merchants, the age of capacity on Carthur, the age of Merchants. At the same time as the study progressed, IDOT began their high-speed rail initiative, and they actually advocated for options for a new bridge capacity for rail. I think the way we've approached the study is to say that the region faces a number of network questions, meaning how railroads choose to operate impacts how the infrastructure works, and then there's obviously the condition of the infrastructure itself. The good news is that in the last 12 months, MoDOT, Internal Railroad, have undertaken two projects to increase capacity on the Missouri side. So they're adding a third track from Grand towards the Amtrak station. So in that route, we would almost recommend getting all the way to MacArthur to get three tracks when you stop. They're also looking at a rebuild of the Western approach to Merchants. So I think the question we would say is, at some point, there is a serious capacity problem with freight rail going the river, and at some point, additional capacity will be warranted. I think in the near term, you would probably agree that there's an operational question we have to address. One of the detailed recommendations is for a network study partnering with the railroads get that frank understanding of how they're shooting about.
It's a huge expense. We would want to make sure we recommended in the study, the network study get done to see where is the best use of capital or the best way to get more capacity out of the existing system. Because where you place the bridge is a very complicated decision. It has different impacts between the railroads, the kinds of freight we handle today. What might change for tomorrow? I mean, right now, you've got a fair amount of oil coming in by rail to Wood River. That's on the edge of your network. It's not creating much congestion. It's a big change from 2 years ago. So we have it in there like that. We didn't have in our study the driver of the age as much as the network performance being important for the region. That's right behind it. Similar to that point we had in our discussion, that the nation may be far more interested in the railroad bridge in St. Louis than even just the region itself. Because there's only, as Bill mentioned, there's only four network crossings of the river. Railroads have their own in a few places. This is the only place you can do a lot of connection among all the railroads. So if you lost a bridge, or even just a track for a while, it really changes the nation's network movement of freight.
I think underlying that is this last part, which is part of the reason when we talk about this notion of a freight transportation district is that, again, from a LoDOT standpoint, the one thing they can do is get freight across the river as quickly as possible. And that can be a policy goal for LoDOT. Well, if that's LoDOT's objective, that gets a lot of freight, gets the Illinois side more quickly than it did before. And that means since most of the rail infrastructure is on the Illinois side, getting to that second question, how does the region deal with increasing impacts on the Illinois side? So it's, again, this question of how do we get the two sides of the river to work more effectively to manage issues that really cut across the river quite simply. And ultimately, the bridge, additional capacity becomes clear.
As a freight rail advocate, I guess, in my role, I think it's a great idea. I think you'll find the class ones generally think it's a good idea, but where it goes is going to have an impact on others' world of view. And it is of interest to the nation as well. What I've seen in the last 10 years from Mike's national rail plan, the sense of the importance of goods movement to the nation and to the states has really increased. And there are opportunities for multi-level investment in projects. If you guys care to advocate, partner with other levels of government and with private industry, you can probably make something happen.
I just want to make a comment that, you know, this study I think really demonstrates the fact that all of us around this table, the jurisdictions and the people that we represent are really interconnected ourselves in terms of how we compete as a region against regions all over the country and regions all over the world for that matter, and our ability to attract and retain jobs and businesses here in our region is impacted tremendously by the transportation infrastructure that we have in place. And while in each and every one of these specific, the entire infrastructure really is a regional infrastructure, and all of us have our individual assets within our regions, our districts that we represent, but it all is related, it's all interconnected, it all really impacts our ability to compete and to maximize the really effectiveness of this infrastructure. It's important that all of us work together. And I know my economic development agency and Charlie Dooley's economic development agency are working very, very closely together. But I think this really shows that we as a region really need to do more to not only look at what some of our weaknesses are and our challenges as well as what our assets are, but figure out how we, as a region, really prioritize some of our regional, you know, what our priorities are to improve this infrastructure and then work together to get it done. I know that's not easy, but I do think that it's critical. We have limited resources here, which is always an issue as they do all over the country, but by maximizing those resources in a way that's going to better our infrastructure for the entire region is very, very important. And as I said, you can see from the map that there are some critical assets in each and every one of the jurisdictions that we all represent. So I hope we just don't look at this and put it aside and have it sit on the shelf. But I do think that we need to, you know, move forward with these recommendations as well as the information that we have to strengthen our transportation infrastructure so we can compete better, so we can retain jobs, so we can grow jobs. In St. Louis, we are very, very strategically located here. We're in the middle of the country, and we do have a very good transportation infrastructure, but it is aging, and it can be better, and it can, you know, both in terms of river and rail and highway and all the other things and bridges, these are all things that can be improved dramatically to improve our competitiveness. So. Appreciate the work you guys did. This was a good thing for this organization.
Any other comments? Yes.
When you all was looking, did you all look on the east side of East St. Louis where there's a yard on 26 and Grady and the Converse going east? There's a fire. It's a yard. It used to be one of the top yards in the country, but what they happened, they maximized it and moved it to, added to a Dupo, you mentioned Dupo, but that's a great potential right there. You ever looked at talking about bringing that back to life? Now, it's a holdover on 26 and 26th Street, buried with the 5 years.
That's right.
And in the 50s, in the 60s, it was striving. Have you looked back to bring it back alive, or you just want to just a certain part of the region you want to work at?
No, I think.
Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in East St. Louis, as well as pieces of Fairmont City, and again, there are a number of municipalities over there. There's a tremendous amount of land that's either vacant, brownfield, prior use that is going to be tremendously well connected to the interstate system when the new bridge is finished. I think the yard question is equally significant because in Metro East as a whole, you have a number of older, smaller yards. And again, 20 years ago, our yards had, they were hump yards, we used boxcars.
4,000 feet was fine, you know, it's not.
Nowadays, the yards need to be longer, they're more intermodal, so more shipping containers, fewer boxcars. So I think the real challenge for Metro East is not just for East St. Louis, but again, looking across that whole area, again, CSX and Rose Lake, there are a number of these yards that, you know, they're a little small. So it's a bigger issue than just East St. Louis, but it's how do we get the right size infrastructure to manage growth? Well, clearly in East St. Louis, there's a lot of land that can be put to better use.
And some of those older, smaller yards, what you see happening with them is they're repurposed as transload facilities. So instead of being a conventional yard where you're building trains, you're partnering up with local industry and loading and unloading rail cars of various commodities there. You just have to attract more class one traffic.
Is that helpful?
Well, and that's my question, but you mentioned twice East St. Louis. Well, I represent East St. Louis, so I have to be East St. Louis right now, and the surrounding area is fine, but we need a lift too in East St. Louis with the rail, with whatever. I don't want to see things die, and I could speak up for it. See my point? So if East St. Louis go, the other ones go. If East St. Louis die, the other ones die. So you can understand what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So we need a lift. We need you to look at that double time if you have to see how you can help.
You
understand
me? Right.
Yes. Okay.
And a key point to make is right now East St. Louis sits at Route 3 and the new bridge. I mean, tri-level interchange, and a lot of that land is right there. So,
Can you use the land?
I think some of it I can. There's some brownfield questions. Again, we did some research looking at the tri-level interchange itself, some of the geothermal potential associated with the dewatering operation. I mean, on paper, there are actually some very interesting positives about looking at industrial development. I mean, brownfields issues are, a national challenge. It's uncertainty about what's below grade. But frankly, there are brownfields issues in probably all 23 of the industrial areas we looked at.
Just as an example, we met with CN yesterday. And CN is hardly doing any business with St. Louis right now. They have a yard, Venice, that they still own. And it's right near the foot of the new I-70 bridge. They didn't even know it. Their eye went, there's an opportunity there. So that's what when we talked about that bridge being transformational in terms of increasing the value of that real estate, improving the access to it, that's what we're talking about. That's really good.
And the railroad portion. You're absolutely right, but it's also how do they meet their business needs with the assets they have and how might they modify them? And that's why we recommended the network study, because you can see how these individual pieces that right now they don't see a use for, so the yard sits there or the space sits there, or they might have removed the steel track, but they still own the land. How does that get repurposed for their business purposes or their customer relation? And they look at industries all the time to sell sites to them. How do they repackage them? That's a part of the conversation that is more complex, but in the details can be brought together to bring these
different modal events together and said, oh, we can reuse this and take advantage of what St. Louis has in its location.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Sure. Okay. I appreciate you. We have a large agenda, something we're on here.
We're going
to move on with the agenda. I apologize. I will say this. I'd like to get together with Charlie, the mayor, Elman, Parker, myself. I do think we have to take the next step. One thing we do need to do is to go with the Regional Freight Transportation District. We have to move in that direction. I think your presentation was very good. Get the mayor involved in that. I think a lot of times we hear these reports, we don't take action to move forward. I think this is something that we definitely need to get us together to move forward on this. So, and then probably we'll expand this discussion down the line and get into more details.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask if they include, I didn't hear anything about passenger, dovetailing with passenger traffic when they're talking about the rail. I just wanted to get
you want to answer that to the press.
Simply put, I think on the Illinois side of the river, both Union Pacific and Amtrak are focused heavily on how they jointly use what will be a significant increase in capacity between St. Louis and Chicago. I think the fundamental question for the region also with high-speed rail is you instantly run into a series of choke points between Alton and St. Louis. The river's the obvious one, but there are a number of at-grade crossings between Class 1 railroads. So it's not a simple question. Clearly, from my perspective, connectivity to Chicago is a great thing. Union Pacific is already looking at increased intermodal between the two cities. So it has to be balanced. Again, at the end of the day, the right of way is the limit.
So very good point, and it also applies to if you're going to advocate for a new rail bridge, for example, you're not going to get that singularly on the back of a bridge.
Appreciate it. We'll go to the discussion item B.
All right, discussion item B. He has a very short report on Gray Street.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Paul Humphrey, and I just thought it was time to bring everybody to touch back on Gray Street. It's been a while. We just wrapped up three projects, very different projects. This is the barest representation of what we were doing. It's the Dorset Road, Page Avenue, and Grand Center, and three very different project sponsors as well. Railroad Heights, Beyond Housing, which is a non-profit, and then Grand Center, which is also a redistrict base. So Dorset Road, I just wanted to touch on the fact that they came to us in their application, kind of identified this strip. It's almost 4 miles long, very different characters, you know, different personalities. The district breaks down into smaller pieces. But it's a corridor that never really suffered from overdevelopment or significant retail development. So it doesn't have five lanes, it doesn't have a lot of empty retail, it doesn't have a lot of those things we've been seeing when we're thinking of Lindbergh or Manchester or other arterials. But one of the things that Maryland Heights was really interested in was kind of a town center place to go kind of identify, yes, I'm now in Maryland Heights. And looking at things, their market, their housing market for the foreseeable future is fairly flat. They have modest commercial and business opportunity in terms of the market. And but at the same time, you've got a major employer. We have dense housing right by there. There's a lot of pedestrian traffic. So this project really focused on sort of nodal development. And at 10,000 feet, this is what it begins to kind of look like. So you see there are things built in here, the layers make things more pedestrian level, pedestrian access. The roadway, there's no road diet on this one. Particularly, Dorset Road is really functioning close to capacity. There's no real room to take space away. Right of way is fairly restricted. You can't really widen it out for, in many places, for multimodal, you know, bike pen paths, things like that. So some of the challenges became, you know, how do we begin to focus on these districts? How do we begin sort of create some place, some sense of place? And a lot of this, you know, the market for a lot of this redevelopment is redevelopment. It's a lot of the functions they have occurring on the corridor are getting close to what you would call obsolescence. So as they begin these older apartment complexes, as they begin to redevelop, begin to reshape, we think how that might benefit the broader community instead of just that site development. And then on the ground, this is what it kind of begins to look like. see the placemaking, you can see elements of environmental best practices, you can see a lot of the traffic and safety issues, and how the land use planning and the transportation planning really are in sync with each other. Grand Center is a very different one for us. This is a district plan more than a corridor plan. Of course, it has a corridor going through it. But this one, by and large, has a very strong and organized project sponsor, and they're really going full tilt. But they wanted a plan to help them invest kind of in a more wise, more well thought out way. So we wind up with a lot of intermodal connectivity. Where are you bringing people into the district? Right now, Grand is the spine. It's a regional center, this arts district. And so their competition isn't regional. They're unique in their region. Their competition is national. And so they've been looking at what is the competition? How are they functioning? How are they working in terms of marketability and development? Then also we had to lay in the unique and complex traffic issues that they have. They have the daytime traffic. Now this blob right here is the VA hospital, which is currently planning for a major redevelopment of their site. A lot of jobs there. But then also you have the nighttime, the evening event peaks. You know, what happens when the Fox and the symphony all let out within 15 minutes of each other, and you've got, you know, 90,000 cars trying to dump all onto the panel. It doesn't work. So a lot of this was about using the grid instead of the spine, focusing Grant as actually more of a pedestrian-focused connection. And it also, the other thing to point out, the $68 million build-out. This is by phase. All of these little sub-corridors are own pieces. Cost estimates broken down into chunks that really begin to make sense long-term, how to implement this. So this was about filling holes in their market. Part of their traffic solution is actually supplemental land uses. You know, they have events, they are short on places to dine and eat, and ways to keep people from immediately jumping in the car after the show and leaving. So if you can get a number of people to linger, that helps with your traffic spikes. All of these things begin to relate very closely to each other. And this is what it begins to look like on the ground. Page Avenue, if you're all familiar with Page Dale and Beyond Housing, it's an organization that's been there for quite some time now. It's what we really believe is an emerging neighborhood, emerging district. And they have what is kind of their main street is dangerous main street for them right now. It's an arterial, it's a MoDOT road, it has excess capacity. We worked closely with MoDOT through this to make sure that this roadway, even though we're proposing a road diet, still functions within their network the way it needs to. We have Beyond Housing, which has $10 to $30 million, depending on how you look at it, in the pipeline for the next 10 years. They are investing here. Major intersection, they now have a grocery store recently. They now have a senior living center recently. They now have a bank center recently. All along this corridor, they're really putting a downtown in place, a Main Street in place for themselves. It doesn't function, it's dangerous. And one of their goals, of course, is to get beyond the need of subsidy for their housing and their development. So probably won't get there within the duration of this plan, but when this plan is implemented, that's kind of a leaping point for them to kind of get into straight market rate development, we believe. So Page is a main street. There's a lot of extra commercial space in that corridor that's being repurposed. And this plan really helps give them direction, how they're going to spend this money. They've already adjusted some of their plans. They've got plans for a theater that's going in the next 2 to 3 years, a clinic, a medical office space to support that clinic. And through the course of this plan, they've already adjusted those, you know, what they plan to do with those buildings, where they're going to put them, how they site, how they integrate with the neighborhood. Parking is always a major issue. And they also, Page Dale, Beyond Housing was very organized and have a lot of momentum. They had three concurrent planning efforts going on. This is part of that. Try to brand it as one overall effort. A lot of community engagement. Over 100 people would show up at these meetings. It's very tight neighborhood. And this is what it begins to look like on the ground. So one of the other things that we've done, we're, of course, we're going to do another Great Streets project this year, and we needed to adjust how we define the Great Streets. I'm not going to go through these, but I wanted to mention the reason for that. One is that some of these components that we laid out before, the industry's really evolved. These are a little dated, particularly like drilling methods, different things, different people. Let's be specific. The other is to become a little bit more concurrent or a little in sync with what people are calling complete streets, which is a trend that's gaining momentum nationally. There's a lot of legislation out there about complete streets. Various municipalities are taking it on. Our overall goal is to make sure these are not paper projects. We want them fundable. We want them, you know, real traction, get them implemented. So if we can make some adjustments to a program that we're already very consistent with, we feel it has better chance of available funding sources that sort of thing from implementation. So the next project, the one we're about to start, is West Florissant. And this is Ferguson-Delwood. It's a county-owned road. The reason for selecting this one is last time we went through a selection process, they submitted a very strong application. We wanted to do it, we just didn't have the resources. Meanwhile, the resources we have this year for a project, we feel match this project very well. So we decided to go ahead and fund this one and move forward with it. You'll see multiple jurisdictions down here. So you have Delwood, Ferguson, and also County. All three of these entities are participating in the match funding in a way. Very much looking forward to getting into this. Ferguson has a strong organization and a good track record of moving forward and being progressive and actually getting things done. We feel that this project is a very strong one to move forward with. It has a lot of wheels, I guess. There's also a very obvious need along this area, so we're very excited about that. Schedule for this, right now we are going through, I guess we've started the consultant procurement process. Our goal is to be in front of you at the September meeting for action, permission to negotiate for a consultant, and then work would hopefully start in October. The project would be completely done at the end of the fiscal year, end of June next year. So I just ran through a lot of very quick, a lot of information very quickly for your questions. Glad to answer.
Any questions for Paul?
All right.
Thank you. Discussion item C, please.
Discussion item C. Nick will discuss briefly. He's been requested to talk about the interoperable communication. Where are we? What have we done?
Good morning. One of the largest projects STARS has undertaken is the interoperable communications project, which puts communications ability across the region. Early on when STARS first formed, it was recognized that one of the great improvements we could make for first responders across the region was to develop a communications network that will improve communications not only for our daily use, but for when a major disaster occurs. Back in June of 2008, the board approved a conceptual plan that showed how the region could develop interoperability by developing a system of systems, which allows each agency or each county to have their own system, but have them all linked together through the regional digital microwave system. In December of 2009, East West Gateway entered into a contract with Alpha Telelucid Technologies to develop the microwave network consisting of 76 power sites you see on the map today. Now, a lot of designs that occurred back in 2009 have changed because of the selection of tower sites that are available across the region. Not only the right tower sites that work for the microwave, but also those that work for the land mobile radio system that the microwave supports. So in 2010, we kicked off the project in the Illinois counties as phase one. And in the top left corner, you see is Madison County. The system has been installed in Madison County. It is currently being used in Madison County in beneficial use. They are tied to the STARCOM 21 number. As I said, they're getting the beneficial use off the system. Next is St. Clair County. We have some equipment installed on the Barton site, the State Road site, and the Fayetteville site. We're still awaiting tower retrofits for Prairie du Pont, the Metro Transit site in Belleville, and the Kaskaskia site you see on the southern part of the slide. In Monroe County, equipment has been installed on the three water tower sites, on the sites of Monroe County Sheriff, the Waterloo site, and the Columbia site. Now, connections to St. Clair County are on hold right now until the tower sites are retrofits are completed in St. Clair County. On the top left of the map, you see St. Charles County. All the sites have been selected and been locked down. We are about to start path surveys on those sites. Now, because, again, tower site selections have changed since original design, we need to do additional path surveys to make sure that the links that you see flashed on the map will work on those different tower sites. We're pretty confident they will, but there still has to be what's called a path survey, where they actually walk the path to make sure there's no obstructions on microwave beam between the sites. The next one is St. Louis County, which has the largest number of sites, a total of 25 sites. They are still selecting their tower sites. I think about a little over half of them have been locked down, but still a few more still be completed. And then the last one in Jefferson County, all the sites have been locked down and been confirmed as being able to be used. And we'll be starting path surveys along with the St. Charles County site, probably about the second week of August. Now, I should point out that there are four linkages between Missouri and Illinois across the river, and tie-ins to the St. Louis City existing microwave site, or microwave equipment that's there now today. So what this creates is a region-wide interoperable communications network being supported by the microwave system. Each county becomes the owner-operator of their microwave equipment in their county. But because they all will be tied together as a regional network, they all have to agree on how this network will be operated. In other words, what can and cannot be attached to this microwave. Because of that, to outline how they will do that, an intergovernmental agreement was created back in January of 2011. I should point out Chief Greg Brown of the Eureka Fire Protection District is here today. Chief Brown is the chair of the Interoperable Communications Core Group, which the intergovernmental agreement set up by those system owners. Now, any agency can be sponsored by one of those governmental agencies to become part of this network if they see a beneficial use to be part of the entire regional network. That's pretty much it.
Very good. Any questions, Steve?
So my question is why can Metro not use this existing?
If Metro feels that they can have beneficial use by being part of the network, they could be sponsored by any one of the counties or even the city of St. Louis who are members of the core group.
So why are they not?
I can't answer that.
And I think is there $28 million or something going to be spent for a separate system? I want Nick to answer, please.
Well, the microwave itself was $11.7 million.
Pardon me?
The microwave itself was $11 million, so the funds that STARS provided for is $9.7 million. But that's what you're talking about as far as the microwave.
Yeah, but again, I don't understand why their taxpayers have to pay for a system that seems to duplicate the one we have.
Well, I need to understand clearly. The microwave itself is being paid for by the grant system. Now, the individual counties came up with their funding, and I understand correctly, Metro is looking for funding to develop their system, but I can't explain that. It'd be better if he was able to explain that himself, because we've not been part of the design or development of the Metro system.
But my question is, why not?
They were there in the beginning. We created the intergovernmental agreement, which allowed them to become part of it. But I can't answer why they are not a part of it.
I would like to hear the
Health response. I think I can answer that.
Go ahead. You can respond.
Right.
Now identify who you are and make a reason.
Identify
who you are and make a response.
I'm Raymond Frame, Chief Operating Officer for Metro Bi-State Development Agency. And I've been, in effect, the project manager for our part of the regional radio system going back to the year 2000. So I can explain some of the decisions that were made at different points. As to, the core group that, governs this is basically regional entities, elected, governmental entities. And it is true, we could be sponsored to be a part of it, but, What Nick is describing is a backbone of a radio system. And all of these connection points know, or microwave connections that are basically controlling the radio system. But the radio system itself is branching out like a cell phone network almost to cover the entire region. Our backbone that we're using is our own fiber optic network that we lay along the MetroLink alignment as part of the MetroLink system. Our complete command and control logic for the MetroLink system is fiber optic. And so when we went to have our backbone for the our port of the radio system, it actually was the cheapest possible pathway for us was to use the existing fiber optic network rather than the regional microwave network. First off, it's fiber optic that lays in the protected right of way. Second off, I'm already maintaining it. So for me to actually hang a couple extra microwave towers would have generated an increase in cost for the region for the transit system. And we viewed it as really unnecessary for our purposes.
Oh, but why couldn't you use the microwave towers that are being built now? Why would you have to build any additional towers?
We're building towers not for regional connectivity, but to provide radio coverage to certain areas where buses and trains operate.
But doesn't what we're after here, doesn't this system provide radio coverage to the entire region?
Yes. And so it'll go back to the regional controller that is designed and built according to the STAR system. We are with the City of St. Louis's regional controller. There's another switch that's located in the Metropolitan Police Department. And we will be using, that is our primary control switch. So, but the effect it has, and in the system of systems, our system is a coordinated 700 megahertz transmitter system. And we had a couple places where, because of the use of frequencies, we needed to be able to put a radio frequency in a place. So we're actually only building two towers. Most everything that we're using is commercial towers that we're negotiating long-term capital leases
for. Ray, you lose me real quick when you start talking about the technical stuff, and I understand. I should probably know more about that. But I mean, from where I'm sitting, it looks like, Charlie and I have been working trying to get a bridge across the Missouri River at Weldon Springs, and we've been working together to get one bridge. We haven't gone and built two, his bridge and my bridge. And just generally, it looks like there's a lot of duplication here that maybe wasn't necessary.
So in 2011, I'm deploying, right? And at the time, all the counties are going out to bid, right? I don't know what your frequency packages are going to be. I don't know who your vendor is going to be. I'm not 100% sure what your technology is going to be. And I'm getting ready to go out there and light off radio transmitters. I'm completely aware of what's going on within the region, and I made a conscious decision that I was going to steer clear of government and municipal towers because you had first claim. And I went to commercial towers where I could negotiate a long-term lease. Now, I'll be honest with you. My funding source, which is the Federal Transportation Administration, they really like it when I build things. And it would have been $30 million to build all of the towers I needed to deploy a complete radio system and all of the not-in-my-backyard stuff that goes along with that. Right? We opted instead to go to commercial towers initially where possible because it was much cheaper than deploying new towers. Number one, and number two, there was just a wealth of them available throughout the St. Louis region. However, when the started radio system worked, since you hired Motorola as your vendor, your individual procurement, and you recently went back and filed new frequency plans with the FCC, and the FCC is the root lawyer, right? And they're the ones who mandated HDTV, where the public safety spectrum is going to be, where everybody has to migrate to. And we were able to take a look at what is the frequency plan for the other system that's being deployed. Then we came to St. Louis County, and we're going to cooperate on a tower at the MoDOT property at 64 and 270, basically. And then we also saw what was happening in St. Charles County and said, probably be better for you, better for me, if I cooperated with St. Charles County to beam a system into the Chesterfield Valley from St. Charles, would save me a little bit of money and would reduce your costs as well. So we approached you the same way.
Well, I understand.
But that was not possible until the new frequency plan.
No, I understand that. I understand that. That explains. And I guess my only question now is going forward. Is there any money, any chance that the money you would save by co-locating with St. Louis County or St. Charles, that money then could be used to expand the system itself for more bandwidth? And I'm already being told that the system, eventually we're going to have to spend more money and get more bandwidth.
Again, since the technology decisions have been made, I mean, there's no guarantee. But the switch that is being deployed in St. Louis County, and the switch was deployed at Metropolitan Police Department, should have the ability in the future to be connected to GOP. Okay, the technology should exist. The possibility exists, for example, on my radio system that I'm building for Metro Bus Network. I'm taking the fourth priority. Even though I don't have fire, police, ambulance necessarily on the system, right? My radio system is programmed to make buses talk on the fourth level priority. So if in the deployment of the system going forward, we find that the ability to patch through existing metro infrastructure, or for me to patch through existing infrastructure that is being built as part of the other system, without amending frequency plans, without changing the whole infrastructure, we should be able to do that. And we stand ready to support any level of that.
Last question. There's been some timing problems here that created this situation. But I just want to make sure that I understand. If the timing had been different and everything had been better, you could have gone ahead and worked and become part of this system. And the reason I ask that is because, I mean, I've got a highway department that has its own radio system now. And I want to make sure that intergovernmental agreement would allow me, when that system becomes obsolete, to go ahead and become part of the interoperable system that's up on the screen. And are we going to be able to do that?
Yeah. That's what I would agree to.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Just real quick, I want everybody to understand that we have been working, Franklin County is not, as you can tell, it's not a part of this, okay? However, Nick, if you can make sure I get this right, okay? The northeastern part of Franklin County will be covered through our, some of the entities working with St. Louis County and STARS and everybody. We still, because of our topography, it's going to be difficult and very costly to put up the remaining towers in Franklin County. We're going to have special tax, but it's still our goal to get there. But at least on the northeastern part, we'll be able to tie into the grid there, and with some of our agencies, and communicate with each other. So at least we'll be able to do that on the northeastern side. The rest of the county is going to be a little more difficult, but it's still our goal to get there. So just so everybody understands.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that, as you can see, as I said earlier, each one of these loops is a county, and the county is part of that core group and the intergovernmental agreement. Franklin County, even though they have no tower sites, as you can see on the map, they are a member of the core group and a part of this whole process since day one. And to put this in layman's terms, the systems that are being built in Jefferson, St. Charles, and St. Louis counties will flow over into Franklin County, especially in the northern parts of the county, which gives a beneficial use of areas in that will benefit Franklin County, so they can be part of that system as well. And that was the initial goal here, was to have a system of systems that benefits the entire region.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
Just to follow up on that, I will say that you see the Schlursberg tower there. I am not the most popular person. Schlursberg these days. Actually going to serve my good friends, Cali, more than Biden will, but I'm glad that.
Hey, welcome. God love you. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, comments, questions? Thank you, Nick. We go to action items. Action item A.
The action item should go action faster than the presentation. So that's the good news. You heard that one?
Yeah.
First one, they're all important action items. The first one is probably as important as anything else because it ties our federal monies to getting the projects done. And if I could just mention briefly, we've got Kevin Ward here, who I think you met last time. Kevin is the bridge manager at Federal Highways, and his counterpart cannot be here. Hey, baby, she is new, and she is trying to run the whole district and meet people and everything. But in her assistant, Glenn Wilkerson, is here from the IDOT side. People from them that represent Federal Highways, it's required that they work the Federal Highways and we work together. Imagine that, Federal Highways and we and all work together. And I'm happy to tell you that it works very well. And there are two people that really do need to be, there are really three people that need to be recognized in addition to all the others, but two from Federal Highways. Betsy from Illinois, she did an awful good job. I want to recognize her. Brad, who had to be in D.C. from representing the Missouri side at Federal Highways, working with East West Gateway, and the third one is standing right there. Larry did an awful lot of work working together, but it worked hand in hand, and we can't always say that. That's what we need to be doing. So. With that, we need your vote on this.
Larry, I promise to keep my question. Congestion management process, our CMP is a federal requirement. We must have an implemented CMP that is an integral part of the regional planning process. The CMP was presented to the board in May of this discussion. Since then, with the help of our regional partners and federal highway representatives, we refine and finalize the document and be ready for approval. Staff recommends approval of the St. Louis Metropolitan Rate Congestion Control Process.
Best presentation I heard today.
Yes.
any questions or comments? Is there a motion?
Move it from the.
Do I have a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jerry. Action item B.
He's taking over now.
On consultant selection and additional funding for the Loop Trolley project. There is an amended memo at your desk, and we need to change this memo as the cost of the contract. In last May, you did authorize us to extend the contract with CH2F Mill to do the final design work, or to complete the final design work for the Loop Trolley. FTA basically said that's against our procurement policies. You need to offer new procurement. We did it. We got one proposal from CH2F Mill, which we really anticipated. That's all we did. And as of late yesterday afternoon, they came in with their cost proposal, which is about $430,000 to complete the work. We originally estimated it would cost $300,000, but we've reviewed their estimate. We think it's reasonable. We think it's probably come down a little. But what we're asking today is authorization for Ed to enter into a contract with CH2F Mill for not to exceed $430,000, and for us to receive additional funds if agreeable from the Loop Trolley TDP. This actually will have to be taken through the Loop Trolley TDP because this is a little bit above the amount that they had granted us earlier. So we are requesting approval on those two recommendations.
Any questions? We have a motion. Move for approval. Second.
I got a question. What's the total cost of estimated for Loop Trolley?
About $40 million.
And that will come from that? Transit.
There's an urban circulator grant. There are various other federal grants in there. There's the TDD has a sales tax. There are new market tax credits. And then there is a TIF, we call it TIF, in that district. So a lot of the money will be locally generated within the airport.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor by a sign of aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you, Gary. Action item C.
The next one's David. The HUD grant requires another follow-up study, and David will explain that. It's all in the budget that's in the grant. David.
Thank you, Ed. Good morning, everyone. We're in the final stages of the regional sustainable communities grant that was funded by HUD. And in your packet, you'll see a flyer for a series of open houses to begin April 20 and run through September 25th. We're covering most of the region with those open houses and encourage you to send your staff or other folks and help publicize this event. We will also be setting up meetings with the executive committee members over the next month to meet with you individually on the plan development. Today, we'll bring the draft plan to the EAC and board in September, and then we'll come back in October with the plan for your endorsement, final plan in October. That's the current plan. Today, we're recommending approval to enter into a contract with BBC Consulting to do a follow-up study phone survey during September and October. This is part of the requirements on the grant. It will be fully funded by the grant. We reviewed five proposals. BBC's proposal actually came in the middle in terms of cost, but neither of the two that were lower bids really had a complete methodology or a complete set of elements that we felt were important to the project. So that's why we're recommending going with that particular firm.
That's the recommendation. That's the recommendation. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay, motion. Second. On the question? All in favor by the sign of aye?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Thank you, Dave. Action item D.
No, you didn't. Action item Nick. He alluded to Nick gets to get back up. He alluded to a contract without help about pathways, but two counties need additional, and they're going to pay for it.
As I showed in the presentation, there's a need to do additional path surveys in Jefferson and St. Louis, St. Charles County because of changes in the tar site designs. Therefore, we're asking for approval to negotiate with Alcatel Lucent for a contract amendment to increase the total amount by $51,485. Now, that will be paid for by St. Charles County and Jefferson County 911 dispatch.
So moved.
Second.
On the question? All in favor by a sign of aye?
Aye.
Both sides have it. Thank you. Action item D.
E and F are the annual the hurdles that hopefully you give. One air quality and then the other one will be the tip. Jason will explain those. You have had both of those 2 months in advance. You all have had a chance to look at it, but Jason will briefly go through it.
So short.
By me.
The conformity process, you know, ensures that the programs and activities that post in the long-range transportation plan and the transportation improvement program conform with statewide air quality. We complete this process annually when we develop a TIP. Based on the conformity analysis that we did, the projects and programs included during the long-range transportation plan, as well as the 14 to 17 TIP, are found to be in conformity. Since we met in May, we did take the air quality conformity document as well as the TIP out for public comment. The official public comment period went from May 31st through July 5th. We had the document available at the open house meetings. We had six of them throughout the region in June. And we also had a document on our website for the virtual open house meeting. And at this time, that recommends approval of the air quality conformity document.
Any questions or comments?
Motion to approve the
second motion.
Second.
Question? All paid by sign of aye.
Aye.
Both sides have it.
Jason will also present.
We did that. We did both.
We did them both together.
Yes.
Well, you did a good job.
Any other business? I've got four people over here. They witnessed, they were here for item F to see the Washington Bridge approved in the TIP. Mayor Sandy Lucy, who you remember, former board member. Our chairman for the last 4 years of the Washington Bridge Committee, Bob Sick,
Darren Lamb and Sal Moniatis are all board, sit right over there.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. This is always a big deal for us to get that bridge funded. And so we're really excited to be here today and kind of witness the event. We're pretty excited about our, we're very excited about our new bridge. And just to actually see it in the plan and see it coming to fruition is pretty exciting. Thank you, and thank you for your support. And just including, we invite you all to Washington now and when the bridge is completed. So,
you're here.
All right, see you.
Thank you.
Good job.
We will have the shortest meeting in office. We do not have a speaker.
Anything else for the new business?
Push here.
Got motion, second, all in favor, by sign of
aye. Aye.
Are you doing good?